Good evening and welcome to today's program of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Kerry Curtis, Chair of the Club's Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum and your Chair for this evening. We're very privileged this evening to have with us a distinguished speaker, Ed Harrington, who is going to tell us about the status of some very important things in the Bay Area that are important not just for the city of San Francisco but for the Bay Area. Ed is General Manager of the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, overseeing the regional utility that delivers reliable, high-quality drinking water to more than 2.4 million Bay Area customers, collects and treats wastewater and stormwater for the city and county of San Francisco, and provides hydroelectric and other renewable power resources for San Francisco municipal customers. From 1991 to 2008, Mr. Harrington served as controller of the city and county of San Francisco, where he administered San Francisco's $6.1 billion budget. Before becoming controller, Mr. Harrington was the assistant general manager and finance director of the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission and was responsible for the financial activities for the Muni Railway, Water Department, and Hetch Hetchy Water and Power System. He has a very important job, and we especially appreciate the very constructive work that Ed did working with the Tuolumne River Trust, the Environmental Defense, Sierra Club, Clean Water, and the NRDC, and some other environmental organizations in working out a fair and balanced approach to meeting the water needs of the Bay Area, a real accomplishment and a win-win for everyone. And with that, please welcome Ed Harrington.
Thank you very much, Terry. I'll walk around a little bit and see if that works, but I have to keep this in mind and this, so I'll be doing my... If I get confused with my hands, you'll know why I'm talking into this. I'm a very fortunate person. I mean, how many people in life get to be in charge of a system like the Hetch Hetchy Water and Power System? How many people get to work on issues like water and power and wastewater, which are so incredibly critical to our state, our world right now? It's a fabulous place to be. I'm also incredibly lucky to have the opportunity to work with an incredible staff of people at San Francisco Public Utilities Commission. It is what we call a destination hiring place now because people want to work with us. We are the green environmental department for the city and county of San Francisco. We don't just make policy. We do it every day in every way, and so it's a wonderful place to work. And I also get to work in government and not have to wait and worry about the governor's budget. All good things. The PUC, a little bit of background I'll give you first. When Ann asked me to come and talk tonight, she said, let's talk about the kinds of things that you're worried about, the challenges of the PUC, and what's going on there. So to do that, I wanted to give you a minute or two of background, then talk about some of those challenges and some of the things we're doing at the PUC. To reiterate a bit of what Terry said, we have water, wastewater, and power. The water system provides water to 2.5 million people in the Bay Area. So it's San Francisco, and I'll show you a slide in a minute of the entire service area that we have. We have 27 wholesale customers, and then we provide retail water in San Francisco. It's the Hetch Hetchy system, of course, and it has about 265 million gallons a day that we provide to these customers. There's 167 miles of gravity-driven aqueduct water. If you are drinking water in this building, that water has arrived here without ever going through a filtration plant and without ever being pumped. Talk about your lack of carbon footprint from that point of view. It is done by gravity. It's an amazing engineering marvel. This is the service area. So if you're, am I in the way here for folks? So if you're looking here, obviously it's San Francisco, virtually all of San Mateo County, into San Jose, Santa Clara, down in Santa Clara County, up on the southern part of Alameda County. And so it's a major part of the Bay Area, obviously, that we're providing water to. You also see the system coming down from Hetch Hetchy Reservoir up in Yosemite National Park. Cherry and Lake Eleanor are up in the park and also in the National Forest up there, coming through the Central Valley and into the Bay Area. Wastewater. Our wastewater is in San Francisco only, so we have a wastewater collection system in San Francisco that is one of the two combined systems in California. Only Sacramento and San Francisco, for urban areas, have a combined stormwater and wastewater system. Most of those are separate. The good news is that it means that we treat everything before it goes into the bay or the ocean, even the water that comes off from oil slicks on the ground in the first drain. The bad news is that we treat everything, including major storms. 900 miles of sewers. two wastewater treatment plant and one wet water treatment plant. This is basically how we treat the city. The mountains in the middle, not that big a mountain, but Twin Peaks. So you have the west side and the east side, and that's really the topography of how that works too. Again, gravity-driven, and you'll see these very large items which are called box sewers, and that's where we store the excess stormwater while waiting to treat it so that we treat the water. Again, I'm going over this fairly quickly. I'll be happy to take questions at the end, but I wanted to make sure we got into some of the meat of it. Power, we provide power to the San Francisco municipal purposes, so the Muni Railway, City Hall, the airport, the hospitals, those kind of things. It is all clean power. It is hydropower. We also provide power to Modesto and Trolloc irrigation districts. Part of the Raker Act and part of the whole discussion about the Hetch Hetchy system was that we were sharing the Tuolumne River with Modesto and Trolloc irrigation systems, among other people. And so when we were given the authority to build Hetchy, it was to provide water and power, and it was to the city and also to those districts. So we have three hydropower plants, Moccasin Kirkwood, and Home power plants up in the mountains. And we do a lot of other solar and other renewable projects in San Francisco we'll get into a bit. Challenges. The most immediate right now for us is an earthquake. That's why we're rebuilding our system. The big one, obviously, is climate change, and the ongoing everyday forever one is infrastructure and how do we take care of our infrastructure. Most of you, I assume, are from San Francisco, and so you realize something big happened in 1906, and after that we built a lot of our system, and the average life of pipes tends to be 90 to 100 years, so guess what? It's about time. So, earthquake. You'll notice our system very nicely comes right across three faults, three major faults and a number of other faults besides that. So you're looking in the East Bay where we in some places have a tunnel that goes right directly through a fault zone. And so part of what we're doing, obviously, is to try to rebuild to make that as a secure system as possible. So then you have Calaveras, Hayward, and the San Andreas Fault. The U.S. Geological Survey has said that they will expect a 63% chance of a major fault in the Bay Area over the next 30 years. And they've been saying that for a few years now, so 30 is probably too long. This, for those of you who have been around for a while, is going to be a bit of a show. How many people were here for Loma Prieta? We thought that was a big earthquake. So you're going to see the first 35 seconds of Loma Prieta, and you're going to see the first 35 seconds of what we believe the 1906 earthquake, the reproduction from USGS of the 1906 earthquake. I will see if it works. I pushed the wrong one. So you see the seconds ticking off up there. This is Loma Prieta. Big earthquake. You can see the intensity very clearly down in Santa Cruz. While this happened to have taken the Bay Bridge out and did a lot of other damage, you can see it actually is fairly minor when it gets to San Francisco, when it gets to the East Bay. So in another 10 seconds, you will see the 1906 earthquake. The red, obviously, is the most intense part. A little bigger, a little redder. Obviously, it impacts a huge area. It is much more intense. It is much more devastating. And you can imagine if you saw an earthquake like that on the Calaveras or Hayward Fault, where all of our pipelines are. So clearly, this is what concerns us. This is what we're working for, to make sure that when there's an earthquake, and it is when, not if, you will still get water in San Francisco, and we'll get water to the entire Bay Area that we serve. Next big ongoing climate change. Nobody can tell you with any certainty what climate change will do, but pretty much we know it will affect us. We assume it will change our water and hydro supplies. It will affect how we run the whole system. These are pictures of our system, a very dry year up at Hetchy. The Moccasin Powerhouse relies on the water. The far one on the left would be the 2004 flooding in San Francisco from a major storm. all those things will be exaggerated, is our view. This shows the Sierra Nevada, the central coast, moving over towards the Sierra Nevada. And the blue shows pretty much the precipitation that we get right now going towards 2030. And we figure the blue means about 100% of what we see today will probably be happening in 2030. As you look towards 2060 and 2090, you see it gets down to red, greens. That would be 20 to 30 to 40% of the snowpack. This is obviously a big deal. It is obviously also a really massive view of all of California. And part of our concern is that we are trying to get what we call actionable science. We're trying to get projections like this down to the watershed level. So it isn't just the Sierra Nevadas may get drier, or you may get less snow and more rain. It really is much more precise than that, and trying to do the modeling that will get that. And we are getting federal funds. They're now going to some major institutions. We are looking at using defense-grade computer systems to really start to do this modeling in 10-meter or 5-meter areas, as opposed to looking at the entire state of California. But if this last year was any indication, we have a good watershed. East Bay Mud was doing some rationing. We were not doing the rationing. Our watershed is higher and larger. And we were incredibly lucky this year that when the storms came in, they went right up our valley and landed there. So even though you weren't getting as much snowpack at 4,000 feet and 5,000 feet, we were getting a good amount of snowpack at 6,500 feet. Big deal to us. And so this year, our reservoirs are full. We are still asking people to conserve because we always should. We live in California, for God's sake, and we should be taking care of that. But we do know that there's going to be impacts. We're not sure exactly what they are. And the impact certainly would be on the water side coming in. The next impact is on the water side going out. You can't flush in a gravity system if your bay is higher than your system. It doesn't really work very well. So this looks at what the assumption is if we have a 55-inch rise in sea level over the next 100 years, 90 years now. The airport would be underwater. The area around the city would be underwater. This happens to include our wastewater treatment plant, would be under some amount of water. And those big box sewers I showed you, they're all along the Embarcadero and the Great Highway. If we're 5 feet higher in water, they will not be able to produce water going out without a different way of doing business that we are now working on. We're buying duck-billed kind of outlet valves so water can go out and can't come back in. We're pumping the water out as opposed to having a gravity, but it is going to be an issue for us moving forward if sea level rises that much. It'll be an issue for all of us, but clearly one of the big things will be wastewater and how we discard it. The no regrets policy is what we're saying we're working on now. Since we don't know exactly what's going to happen, we think there'll be maybe less precipitation, probably less snow, not sure what other things. We are working on all of our projects with what we call the no regrets strategy, which means that we are trying to figure out what you should do regardless of what happens next. So strengthening your system just makes sense to do. Making sure your system is reliable under any scenario makes sense to do. Trying to figure out the most likely things that will happen and doing those makes sense. It makes less sense to say, oh my God, we think this may happen. Let's go spend a couple $1 billion trying to plan for that. And so we are doing the things we think are the most important first, and we are trying to get better data constantly to make sure that when we make these decisions, they're made with the best data available. The Water Utility Climate Alliance, I'm the chair of that, and the Water Utility Climate Alliance is 8 of the largest water utilities in the United States. It includes New York, Denver, Seattle, Portland, Las Vegas, LA, San Diego. And we have come together because we can move faster since there are a few of us, but we represent a lot of people that we provide water to. And so we are working on our own grants, we're working on our own white papers that talk about how we can get to the next level of information, what kind of decision support models we need to make the decisions we need to make sure our people are protected and they have water as the climate change comes upon us. The aging infrastructure. Again, you know, you're looking at wastewater pipes that tend to have a 90-year life. We are replacing about 5 miles a year. We have about 900 miles of pipe. Anybody here that's good at math would realize that means we're going to get to the mall over about a 200-year cycle for pipes that have a 90-year life. Similarly on the water side. So we will be really stepping up in the next few years the need to replace. We still have brick sewers in San Francisco. We actually still have HOD carriers, which is still an official union of San Francisco. There are three people who are HOD carriers, the people with the little shovel thing with the mortar they carry on their thing. They're all women, and they're the three HOD carriers left in San Francisco that work on our sewer system. But clearly, we need to be working on this. The far picture is a picture of a major break in one of our San Joaquin pipelines from a few years ago. This is the head of the top of one of our, what we call our digesters at the wastewater treatment plant, which collapsed into the sewage it was digesting. And digester does exactly what you would imagine a digester does. It's the same as you're doing in your own stomach. So what are we trying to do? First, always, is to reduce our level of consumption. It makes no sense to build one more power plant. It makes no sense to build one more pipeline or dam. It makes no sense to build a larger wastewater system. It makes much more sense to use less power, to use less water, and recycle the water that you have, and also to reduce the flow into the wastewater system. So in every case, the first strategy is to reduce what we're doing. The next is to rebuild our systems in a way that will withstand these different threats. And the third is just to rethink how we actually use the water and power that we have. San Franciscans right now already consume much less water than most people do. Obviously, there's a reason for that, because we have a lot more high-rises, a lot less lawn, a lot less irrigation that we're doing in San Francisco. We are also fairly conservation-minded in San Francisco. And so we're talking about using, in total in San Francisco, about 91 million gallons a day. Not just to take San Francisco into account, but if you're looking at the entire Bay Area, over the last 30 years, we've added about 2.5 million people in the Bay Area, and our water use has gone up 1%. So it's stunning what you can do with low-flow toilets, with aerators on your showers, with the kinds of things that have not destroyed anyone's lives, but really make us much more efficient in terms of our use of water. We are looking in 2009, 86 million gallons a day, and we're looking in 2018 to be down to 81 million gallons a day. So we have high targets for ourselves that we're going to meet. And while we are getting down to 81 million gallons a day, we are going to absorb Hunter's Point, Treasure Island, a doubling of the population of Park Merced, and all told, about 63,000 housing units, we think, in San Francisco. And we're planning on absorbing that and cutting the amount of water that we use. So we'll be asking for your assistance. We're also going through legislation to really change the different ways that when you install something in your home, you do it in a very efficient way. We're doing this for a variety of reasons. We want to actually have the Tuolumne River and our other watersheds be healthy, and they can't be healthy if we're taking all the water out of them. So we are looking at groundwater. In wet years, we're planning on putting more groundwater into the aquifer that comes on the far side of San Francisco down through San Bruno, and then in dry years pumping it out. But not having San Bruno and South City pump water every year, let them take our water in wet years and pump it out in dry years so we're not abusing it too much. Recycled water. We view ourselves, I think, as being a very conservation-minded city, yet we have no recycling in San Francisco. We have no water recycling in San Francisco. And so right now we are using potable water to irrigate Golden Gate Park. Makes very little sense to me, except that it's more expensive, and so for a variety of reasons, no one wanted to do it. We are in the process right now. We'll be building a recycling plant on the far end of Golden Gate Park, and we'll start to be using recycled water from our Oceanside wastewater plant to use that in Golden Gate Park. The well water that comes in Golden Gate Park will then be blended in with Hetchy water for our drinking purposes. We're going into a partnership with Daly City for some of their recycled water that we'll use to irrigate Harding Park. Lincoln will come from the same recycled one at Golden Gate Park, and Shaw Park is a bit up in the air for those that follow that at the Board of Supervisors. Yes?
I have a question about these underground streams going through, like, Dolores Park. And I noticed that when they had construction down in Valencia, the water was just running for about several days after days. Can you use any of that underground streams in San Francisco?
You really can't use it for potable water. because there's really no filtration system in the city that could take it and use it. Again, the Hetchy water is so clean that we treat it, but we don't have to filter it. The water coming out of the watersheds in the East Bay and San Mateo County, they are actually filtered. But the water coming out of the ground here or seeping out of the ground is not in sufficient quantity to build our own, you know, filtration plant within the city. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't use it, though. And so the ability to use it for irrigation purposes and those things is still very worthwhile. So, again, golf courses. And then the East Side Project, you know, we have been telling people when they build property or big buildings in San Francisco a few years now that they should put in purple pipe for recycled water to be used, but we haven't been delivering that water to them. So we're now looking, as we're looking at rebuilding our southeast water treatment, wastewater treatment plant, really trying to get that water to some of the downtown buildings to be able to use recycled water in those buildings. The consumption of water also has to do, obviously, with not just us, but with our wholesale customers in the rest of the Bay Area. Well, we've committed to reduce from 91 million to 81 million gallons a day. They've committed to reduce about 25 million gallons a day of their use. They use about 2/3 of the water, but they've committed a major reduction of their use of water also. And that's part of a master contract we have that we just renegotiated this last year. Art Jensen is here from representing our wholesale customers, and that will take us to the next 25 years of how we work together and work collectively on making sure we use our resources well. Retrofit on resale, we are in the forefront of things in San Francisco and also in Sacramento trying to change how people have to change their toilets and their washing machines and the kinds of things that, again, without a lot of problem, can really save water usage. And appliance rebates, there's some brochures outside. There's going to be information at the end of this program about different websites. If you buy a washer, if you buy a toilet, if you buy a lot of things, we will give you a rebate to help you pay for that if it's going to be something that's going to save us water. We are also going to go into a direct service on this starting in a few months, where it's easy for us to say, here, go buy a new toilet and we'll give you some money. A lot of people can't do that. So we're going to go out and do water audits of people's homes, especially low-income people. After we do a water audit, if they need a new toilet, we will go buy the toilet, hire the plumber, bring it in, and install it in their home, as opposed to waiting for them to do it. We have money to do that in about 4,000 homes in San Francisco this next year. Advanced metering infrastructure over the next 2 years, all of the meters in San Francisco will be changed. The meters will be read electronically, and they will be read at least 4 times a day. So if you have a leak, you don't have to wait for a month or two till your bill comes in. We'll be monitoring that. And if there's obviously usage in your meter all day and all night, we can alert you that something is probably wrong and go out and do an audit and see if we can help you not have to wait that long and get an oversized bill and be surprised by not knowing what's happening in terms of leaks. Our greenhouse gas emissions target for all of San Francisco is 20% below 1990 levels within a couple of years. On the power side, we provide power for municipal purposes, but obviously PG&E is the mayor power provider in San Francisco. They are using power from Potrero Power Plant. Again, we had two very polluting power plants in San Francisco, Hunters Point and Potrero. We have closed Hunters Point. We are now working on trying to close Potrero. We're doing that in a variety of ways. One, again, is lowering consumption. Another is this Transbay cable, which will allow us to bring power into San Francisco as opposed to generating it here. And we're doing whatever we can in terms of energy efficiency. We're doing solar grants for people. We have started a pilot project with LED streetlights. They last longer. They use a lot less power. They give a truer color. And so you'll see some of those in the Tenderloin. We'll be rolling those out to the city over time. The Water System Improvement Program is the biggest thing we're doing right now. It's a $4.5 billion program. It really is to rebuild the entire Hetch Hetchy water system for reliability. There are 84 projects in 7 counties. It is 50% underway right now. In San Francisco, we have completed almost all of the projects because there was fairly small amounts of environmental concerns when we're rebuilding projects on the same site. As you might imagine, as we get into the Bay Area and we get across the Central Valley, a lot more concern, a lot more environmental concerns. And so we have been working, going through a lot of environmental reviews. We just had 2 pass our commission today. We'll be building the first tunnel ever under the bay. Right now, if you drive on the Dunbarton Bridge, you'll see these little pipes running next to you on these old trestles that are falling down because they're about 90 or 100 years old. We'll be building a tunnel under the bay for that. We also will be adding some additional piping over in the San Joaquin area, not enough to concern people that we'll be taking more water out of the river, but enough to be able to have us do maintenance on that. It is to be completed in 2015, and we believe it will create about 28,000 jobs. We are getting incredible assistance because it's the biggest job creator right now in the Bay Area. So as we go out, we are getting many more bids than the PUC typically has gotten. Those bids are coming in way under engineers' estimates, typically 20 or 30% under the engineers' estimates, and we're really creating a lot of jobs, which is great. Sewer system is going to need to be rebuilt also. The 80% of our sewers effluent goes to one plant in the southeast part of San Francisco. That's going to have to be rebuilt. It's an old plant. It has huge old digesters that create odor issues. There are environmental issues and environmental justice issues in that neighborhood that we have power plants and sewer treatment plants and all those things in the same part of town. We're going to be working on that. One of the other issues that we're finding, I'm not sure if we want to assign this to climate change or conservation or what, but we're very proud that everybody's getting rid of their 5-gallon per flush toilets and getting 1.3-gallon per flush toilets, except our wastewater system relies on water to clear it out. And when you use one-third the water, you get one-third the clearance. So you're starting to get more odor problems, too. That has to be addressed as part of this. We expect to bring it to our commission this year in terms of our master plan for wastewater. We are also rethinking how we do things. I think at one time we were the ones that were here first. We could just take the water, take the power, hope for the best. That isn't how we do business anymore. We are working on habitat conservation plans on the peninsula and in the East Bay to really be good stewards of our land. We provide $4.5 million a year to Yosemite National Park. Most people don't know that, but since our watershed takes in about one-third of Yosemite Park, about 450 square miles, we are very concerned that it be taken care of appropriately. So if you go to Tuolumne Meadows and you use any of the facilities there, we're the ones paying for the trails and the maintenance and all those kind of things, not just the Hetchy area but the entire watershed area, because it's important for us to have that. We are really working full-time on how we put water into the rivers that we have an impact on. In some cases, it's the timing of the year when you can put more water in at certain times, as opposed to it doesn't take more water. It just depends on when you are releasing it for more of a natural flow for the fish. And so we're working on a variety of different projects with Fish and Game and a lot of people to see how we can make an impact. This Buckminster Fuller quote, "Pollution is nothing but the resources we are not harvesting. We allow them to disperse because we've been ignorant of their value." The same can be said about waste. And so certainly on our wastewater projects, we first of all don't want you to get that water into our system. That's great, low-impact development, rainwater harvesting. But besides that, the grease cycle program is a great example of this. Restaurants particularly, but also people, use a lot of grease. They flush it down their toilets or they put it into their sinks. And every year we spend about $3 million unclogging sewer lines in San Francisco. When the grease gets down there, it solidifies into something like concrete. We are now picking up grease from 600 restaurants in San Francisco. We pick it up for free. We take it. We're making biofuel out of it and fueling our vehicles out of biofuel. We end up not having that being a problem in our sewer system. We also end up doing good, and the restaurants love it because it's free. They used to have to pay for it if they were getting rid of it. We are bringing that to your homes in some cases. We had a big pickup at last year on Thanksgiving and on Christmas. We're hoping to do more of that with NorCal and others to see if we can do this some more. But again, it's a major way to just not having things that have value go in and be treated as if they're waste. Recycled water, obviously, again, taking water from Yosemite National Park, bringing it down, using it to brush your teeth, and dumping it 3.5 miles out into the ocean makes very little sense. We should be using and reusing those things. Rethinking power, again, solar, big thing that we're trying to do in San Francisco. We just were listed as coming from almost nowhere 2 years ago. A report came out last week that showed that we have the highest per capita solar installations of any major city in California now. We have less in total than L.A. and San Diego, but the highest per capita. We are looking at wave, wind, geothermal, anything we can get to get renewable energy. And community choice aggregation would be the process. We would be buying good, clean, renewable energy. We would be distributing it through PG&E lines in San Francisco, and that's a project that we're still working on with the Board of Supervisors. So this all comes together in our mission statement, which we've been working on for the PUC also. And to read it, it says, to provide our customers with high-quality, efficient, and reliable water, power, and wastewater services in a manner that is inclusive of environmental and community interests and sustains the resources entrusted to our care. I don't think 20 years ago you would have seen most of the last half of that in the PUC's mission statement. We really do take this seriously. We really do believe that we are stewards of the lands that we affect, and we want to be here. We want to be serving you your water. So with that, here's more information, and I would be happy to take questions. And I believe there's a microphone if you want to ask a question.
I'd like to remind our listening audience that you're listening to a program of the Commonwealth Club of California. Our speaker is Ed Harrington, the General Manager of the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission. And now it's time for audience questions. And I have one. What kind of working relationship do you have with the San Francisco Department of the Environment, if any?
The Department of the Environment, in many ways, is the policy-making group for San Francisco. So the Department of Environment does a lot of work on policies. We pay for a lot of that work. But we're the ones that are more the operating arm than the policy arm, I think is the way that I would describe it. So they would set up the policy for the city to do composting or recycling or something, but we were the ones who would actually go and spend the money to put a new treatment plant or to actually make it happen. So they also are often the people who can do work from grants for individual homeowners. Our Go Solar program is for individuals and for businesses, but often when we get federal grants, it's to be used on city property, and they'll get a grant to be used by homeowners, so there's some interaction that way too. We work closely with them, but they're a different department, obviously.
Could you discuss about the, talking about Hetch Hetchy being returned to its natural state and the discussion about that?
Sure. You know, I guess a couple things. One, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it should happen. So be clear about that. I think that the people who want it to happen are well-intentioned, decent, nice people. I frankly also believe that if I had that much energy, I would try to use it in some place that has more chance for success. Given the needs of California, given the needs of the Bay Area, given the way that we are operating the system and everything else, I don't see that happening anytime in the near future. Again, the discussion of you are drinking water here that was gravity-driven and not treated or not filtered. If you stop that water someplace else to store it, you then have to filter it, and you will have an incredible carbon footprint to just pump it to get it here. There are a lot of issues involved that I don't think have been fully vetted. I don't see it happening.
I had read in the paper about when Bechtel was making an offer to redo the whole Hetchy and the whole restructure, I guess, the water system. You haven't mentioned anything about the budget. Are you using bonds? Are you using Bechtel? How are you standing within your budget right now?
The water system rebuild, the WSIP program, the Water System Improvement Program, as we call it, is about a $4.5 billion program. It will be substantially funded by borrowing money because we'll be getting benefits over 30 years. We'll be paying for it over 30 years. When we went to the voters in 2002 in San Francisco, we said, if you want us to rebuild our system, it will cost you a lot of money. I happened to have been the controller then, and so the words that I put into the voter pamphlet said, it will double your rates by 2015, and it will. And so our borrowing debt service every year is going to go from about $70 million now to about $350 million by 2015. Right now, we're getting incredibly good quotes, and so as we go out each time with a new bid, it's coming in under engineers' estimates. There are two major projects that are over budget. One is the Calaveras Dam over in the East Bay. It is delayed. It has a lot of issues with Alameda Creek. It also has much more toxic, naturally occurring asbestos than we thought, which means additional needs for worker safety kinds of issues, which would prolong the time it would take to rebuild it. The other is the Harry Tracy Water Treatment Plant on the peninsula, where we were quite aware of a variety of faults and side faults, but we found a new one as part of the engineering work that will require us to move and rebuild a reservoir down there. Other than those two, the projects are coming in on target. In fact, some are coming in under budget.
First a comment. 28,000 jobs, that's a music to our ears.
Yes, good.
This climate. Is there actually a competition of investment among the three sectors that you're involved, water, power, and then wastewater?
A completion of investment. Is that competition. There's always an investment for time and priority, but the wastewater rates only go to pay for wastewater. The water rates only go to pay for water, and power rates only go to pay for power kinds of things. So we can't cross-subsidize. Prop 218 and a variety of other rules that we have say that you can't charge anyone more than their cost of service that they're getting the benefit of. And so even within the different groups, like with wastewater this year, a multifamily residence rates went up higher than commercial because their costs were going up higher than the costs we associated with commercial. So we don't cross-subsidize between the divisions or even within where we can make that distinction.
Mike, please.
What's your relationship with PG&E?
You know, it has gone up and down over the years, as you might imagine. We rely on them in many ways. Our power lines end in Newark, so we rely on PG&E to bring that power into San Francisco to be used on the buses and other kinds of things. Clearly, the city's relationship with PG&E at times has not been the best. I think that there are certainly a large group of people who would like to have PG&E bought out and have a public power agency in San Francisco. That's gone to the voters a number of times. It typically gets defeated. The CCA program that I just talked about would aggregate us as the power purchaser but still use PG&E lines for distribution. We are starting to now be in competition with PG&E a bit more. We are going to be the provider of power, as far as we're concerned, to Treasure Island and Hunters Point because PG&E traditionally did not provide power to them. The Navy did when they were Navy bases. We are also getting other people doing development in San Francisco who are asking us to come and provide power to them. As we step further out, we will very much bump into PG&E more often, I think.
The models that you had for the 06 and 89 quakes, is that available on the Internet?
All of this will be available on the Internet. The question will be whether how well they will work. There's always the problem on that model, but we'll put it on the Internet under our website. Yes. In fact, the whole PowerPoint will be on there. They are stunning, aren't they? It really does. Because everybody, I thought, Loma Prieta was a big deal. And then you think, wow, big deals are bigger than that. Yes.
I was glad to hear your comments about climate change, and you talked about snowpack impacts and sea level rise. But I wanted to ask your thoughts about a third potential impact. Most of the scientific conclusions that I've seen suggest California will be modestly drier in the future than it has been historically. And I wanted to ask whether you see that reaching the level of actionable science yet for the SFPUC and what you're thinking is in terms of what it's going to take to meet that challenge.
I think most people are saying it will be moderately drier. There are differences of opinion in some cases whether we'll get, that means a lot more precipitation coming as rain as opposed to snow. Clearly, if that's how it becomes drier, that's a big deal for most water agencies because California doesn't have as many dams to store the water. They count on snow to store the water. And if we're not getting snow, we're getting even the same amount of precipitation. If it's coming as rain, it's a huge deal. That's something that we still don't know what's going to happen with any kind of certainty enough to be able to start talking, and who knows what the reception would be anyway. But if we started talking about additional storage capacity in California, that's not a very popular discussion. I think you will need some fairly irrefutable science before anybody's going to want to engage in that kind of a conversation. So that's what I mean by that actionable science that people actually believe in and can do something with. But yes, generally speaking, we believe it will be drier. Our watershed higher may not be drier as much as some.
Hi. I'm curious, you mentioned recharging groundwater in wet years versus drought years or normal years, and it does seem with climate change, it's sort of a follow-up to the last question, that is going to change. You know, what is a dry year? What is a normal year? And I am curious if there are other thoughts besides just building new storage, or, you know, about how to address some of those things, and just if there are standards already and if you see them changing for what is a dry year and what is a normal year.
Yeah, we typically always look back, and looking back may not be the best predictor of the future at this point. But we enter every water year as if it is the first year of an 8.5-year drought. So we always assume every water year is the worst 8 years we've ever had in the Hetchy 83 history that we have. That's one reason when others have gone to rationing, we haven't had to, because every year we're starting the conservation because we believe every year could be the first year of the worst drought we've had, plus 2 more years of bad drought time. So from that point of view, we are trying to protect ourselves from what does a dry year mean, because we're always going out looking at every year being horribly dry and the next 7.5 years being very dry. But one of the other things we're doing is we keep talking about lowering the per capita consumption. The more you do that, the more you've really hardened your ability to make change when you have a dry year. So when you're down to the average person in San Francisco using 45 gallons a day, it's much harder to ask them to conserve than when they were using 95 gallons a day. You can't put one more brick in your toilet. It really doesn't work. And so we really, that is a very big concern to us in terms of how we do it. We have not figured out what the new definition of dry, though, is. That, again, I think is part of that. You know, if you're thinking that, one of the slides showed that the precipitation could be only 20 to 30% of what it is now, that's a whole deal breaker. Then you're then into what Australia is doing now, where Australia is down to no water consumption. I mean, it's stunning what they've been able to do. That's much different than if you're only dropping 10% or 20%. Then you can change that by storage or by getting wet years.
From what you've said so far, it seems clear that the city of San Francisco is on a very good trajectory in terms of improving all of these systems. And can you give us a comparison to other cities, not necessarily just in California? How would we compare to, I don't know, St. Louis, New York, Philadelphia, in terms of our ability to control water usage and plan for the future, that sort of thing?
In terms of water usage, we are, again, among the lowest in the country. I don't know specifically what's happening in other places, but clearly compared to a Las Vegas or something like that, we're much lower water usage than they are. We, again, have a population in our entire service area where we said, gee, could you do voluntary conservation of 10% to make sure we don't have to do mandatory rationing? And they provided us with 12% cuts without having any mandatory rationing at all. So we're blessed with having people who are very aware and very willing to make changes, which is why we're doing it. Our rebuild of the system is one of the biggest projects happening in the country right now in terms of water systems. Las Vegas has one that's going to cost them about $1 billion because Lake Mead is dropping so low that if it keeps dropping in the next year and a half, they won't be able to get any more water out of it because their outlet valves are too high. So they're building a lower outlet valve so they can keep draining Lake Mead. At some point, that's not a good strategy. We're trying.
Do you know how much the city spends for the water consumption for the low-income people monthly?
One of the things about Prop 218, if you recall Prop 218, that was the you should get to vote if we're raising your taxes vote. I think San Francisco, once again, was the only county in the state that didn't vote for it. But it was voted and passed. No one thought it would apply to water systems, but it applies to water and wastewater systems because there's an assumption that they are property related. It only applies to systems that are run by governments. So if you have a system like Cal Water, they're not under any of these rules. Once that rule kicked in, it said we could not subsidize anybody else. Once that happened, we could no longer provide a low-income subsidy for water and wastewater. So what that means is that the general fund is now providing whatever subsidy we can make for water and wastewater users because we can't give it from – we cannot have ask one ratepayer to pay for somebody else. The general fund last year put in $1.6 million. That provided a discount to about 6,000 people in San Francisco, but it was $1.6 million of general fund money. That's one reason this year we're going to that direct install program. We're going to go to those people and say, what if we just give you a new toilet? That will reduce your consumption by 20% or 30%, and maybe you can pay the real rates, but you'll be using a lot less water, better for all of us. So there's no large subsidy for low-income people. On the Go Solar program for solar installs, there is a larger subsidy for low-income, and you can get double the money in terms of that program. And this being San Francisco, fairly expensive, low-income for a family of four could be $90,000 of income. So if you're interested in solar on your home, go to our website and take a look at it.
Where can the public actually see the sewer master plan that's currently in environmental review?
Sorry if I misled you. It's not currently in environmental review. We are still in draft stage. We have not published it yet. We hope to publish it in the next few months. Then it will go into environmental review probably for a two-year period or so.
You're talking about the future, having a drier California and an aging infrastructure. Obviously, with population growth, is there a crosshairs there where all of a sudden water becomes such a valuable commodity that it starts affecting building and political issues? I mean, is there some stage where that's going to be part of the commission's concern?
If you look at Marin County and how Marin County has not gotten populated, it's because of water. They stopped issuing water permits many, many years ago, and nobody could move into Marin and build a house there, and they protected it for those that were already there. So water is already doing that in a number of places. Every agency in the state has to do a plan every 10 years, and they have to then talk about whether the water is going to be available. And any new development in California has to go first and say, before you can work in this development, someone has to say there's going to be water to provide for you to be able to do that. So we are much more involved now looking at ABAG and planning department statistics about what we think in terms of commercial growth and residential growth in San Francisco to make sure that we can provide the water that's needed as we go out over those years. And it's going to be more important than oil at some point, possibly. Yes.
Could you talk about any of the new developments, especially in processing water? I know that we're maybe the old process. I don't know if you looked at it or not, but I had heard certain cities, especially like Barcelona, has actually gone to laser to zipping the water. And I don't know if there is a way that you have looked at
for
some
treatment,
modern processes.
For water treatment?
Yeah.
We are building the third largest ultraviolet plant in the country over at what we call Tesla Portal, which is in the Central Valley. And that will, again, we don't filter the water, but we treat it in case there is Giardia or anything else. And you want to have at least two treatment systems. So right now we are using chloramine, which has a lot of issues with people. And we are going to be doubling that up with this ultraviolet, which means that you really are passing your water past the equivalent of a black light at a disco. So the water doesn't touch it. There's no contact at all, but it kills anything that's in the water. And so we're looking at those kind of newer technologies to be able to do it. Yes.
Do you foresee the possibility that 15 or 20 years from now, water will be so valuable in dollar terms that the city of San Francisco, with its built-in abundant supply, would actually be better off selling it to L.A. or Fresno or something? And what would that water be worth?
I can't really ever imagine that. I think, again, when you talk about the politics of water, I mean, look at the discussions over the peripheral canal over the years and all the discussions. Look at what has happened with L.A. and Lake, you know, Mono Lake, all that stuff. So it's very, very clearly political. San Francisco hopes to use less water consistently, hopes to be able to share that water with the other users of our rivers. So the people who use the rivers, the animals, the fauna, everything that relies on it. And so for us to take more water than we need to give it to somebody else is not something I could imagine us wanting to do or being allowed to do, frankly.
I know some people that are very sensitive to the chloramines. I wonder if you could discuss that in a little more detail and whether there's any chance it'll be phased out in favor of something else.
Yeah, chloramine is a really big issue. It's a kind of a chlorine-like, but it is what we are told to use by the U.S. government. They have done studies that say there are no adverse impacts, typically, but we have people especially a lot of our wholesale customers have complaints about the chloramine. So we have done a number of studies. We are asking the U.S. health agencies to do more studies, because every time we bring it up, what they tell us is, you're the only agency in the country that's giving us complaints. We are not hearing complaints from chloramine anyplace else in the United States. And so we keep saying, well, you may not be hearing them, but we certainly are, and these are what people are saying, and what can you do about it? So it is not a widespread phenomenon that they are hearing complaints, and that's one reason why they're very reticent to do much about it. But we are still pushing them.
On a scale of 10, how safe is the drinking water in San Francisco, really?
It is incredibly safe, at least a 10. I mean, it is one reason that the federal government doesn't make us filter, is that we test it constantly. We have labs in several locations that we are doing constant tests. We just issued, for everybody who lives in our service area in San Francisco anyway, we just issued our water quality report that would have gone to everyone's homes in the last few weeks. And while it's a lot of stuff to read, if you look at it, you'll often see that there is an allowance of, you know, 2 parts per trillion of something, and we'll have minor traces of it. Every couple of years, the federal government gives out new standards for new things that no one ever even thought of testing for before. And so then we go and test on those, and we have not found problems. All the discussion that you've had in the paper last couple of years about pharmaceuticals in your water, we don't have pharmaceuticals in our water. We think that there was a little bit of estrogen that we thought was possibly naturally occurring from wildlife that may have died in the watershed. But when you have a watershed that is granite up on the mountains, it is really well protected. And it makes a huge difference. And in the watersheds in the Bay Area, it's all filtered. So it is... The bottled water, I think that many bottled water companies take water from a tap. They do say they run it through an additional filtration process before they put it in the water. But our water tests cleaner. Our water is certainly tested much more often than bottled water is tested. And our water is incredibly cheaper. You can buy... you know, gallons, hundreds of gallons of water for a penny with our water. It's 748 gallons for $2. So compare that to bottled water. It's a good deal. Anything else?
Is there any desalination plan in the roadmap? Desalination?
You know, desalination is an interesting thing. We keep our eye on it. It, again, is that discussion of a carbon footprint. Right now, the desalination plants that are existing are incredible users of energy. And so you have an incredible use of energy. You have waste product coming out. We haven't, my view anyway, we have not pushed recycling enough. We haven't pushed reuse enough. We haven't pushed conservation enough to go to a pretty expensive and potentially harmful to the environment desal. Now, if you were in Saudi Arabia and it was your only choice and you were producing a lot of power right there with oil, it may be a good choice for you. I'm not sure it's our first choice. Where it's happening, Marin County's fighting about it right now. San Diego's working on it. You know, certainly that's good someone's doing some studies on it. We are looking in one case in a pilot plant that we're working on with two other agencies in the Bay Area for kind of brackish water. So it's not totally salt water, but kind of brackish, somewhat salty water, to see if that's easier to treat and easier to make into potable water. That's a pilot project we're working on right now, but not a full-blown major desal plant.
In your presentation, you talked about improved water flows on the Tuolumne. Can you expand on that a little bit? I think I'm not sure if some of your hydro dams are up for FERC license renewal. But I'd like to hear your
Sure.
Points.
So the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission licenses certain dams, and because of that, they get very involved in the water issues that are related to those. Our dams up at Hetchy are not under FERC control, but New Don Pedro, which we share with Modesto and Trolley Irrigation District, that is up under FERC control, and that license is coming up for renewal in 2016. It's 16. It seems so strange because we're starting to work on it right now. Right. Okay. Thank you. I mean, I because we've already started to work with MOUs with Mass Interlock to work together on those kind of things. So it's a long process to get to the 2016. What I meant by kind of what's happening with the flows, a couple of things. We've done a test the last couple of years where we have flooded. If you know the Hetchy area, right below the dam is Pupino Valley. Instead of just letting water go through in a normal kind of let a little bit out every day, we have flooded that in the springtime. And so we've tried a whole flood thing to see if that changes what happens in terms of the different life that lives there. And it does make a difference. And so we've been doing that in cooperation with a lot of different agencies to see what's happening. In an interesting way, we work really well with the water rafters, with the river rafters, because we meet with them every year and talk about what their needs are and when we're releasing water for power needs and whether that fits into theirs. And so we release water some weekends really more for them than our power needs because there aren't as much power users on the weekends. This last year, Modesto and Turlock were asked to release more water in the lower Tuolumne, which we really have no legal obligation to do anything. And we released an equal amount of water as they did to make more water flow in the lower Tuolumne. So we are very concerned and interested in doing it, and that's one reason we're working with them more closely on the FERC. But a lot of it, I think, is first of all trying to figure out if you just change your release to the real spawning periods and some of those, how much difference can you make with that?
I'd like to remind our listening audience that you're listening to a program of the Commonwealth Club of California. Our speaker is Ed Harrington, General Manager of the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, and we have time for just one or two more questions.
What is your relationship with advocacy groups like the Sierra Club? I know we were talking about Hetch Hetchy and their big advocate of returning it to the natural state. And another question, if I could. What is your opinion on wave energy and putting windmills out into the ocean?
I think our relationship with advocacy groups is better than it has been in the history of the PUC. We will always bump on certain issues because there will always be we need to provide water to people. That is not necessarily always the top priority of an individual that may want something else that day. But if you look at how we've worked on our program environmental impact report for the entire WESIP program, a couple of years ago, people were angry at us. They did not want us to go forward. We worked very, very well with what we call our clean water stewards. We also have a clean energy steward group that we work with. By the time that program EIR went to the Planning Commission, we had major groups like the Tuolumne River Trust and others coming up and saying, we can support this. We had no appeals at the Planning Commission, no appeals to the Board of Supervisors for a $4.5 billion water system rebuild that affected seven counties in Northern California. Stunning, frankly, that we would be able to do that. We had a quarry in the East Bay. People hate quarries. We had people from the Alameda Creek Alliance and from the Center for Biological Diversity come and testify in favor of the quarry and said it was the best quarry they had ever seen in terms of environmental sensitivity. So while we know we have impacts, we are trying to do it in the best way possible. And very quickly, on wave energy, we have a little thing bobbing out in the ocean right now, testing to see how much wave energy we can get out of the ocean. We have tried to corral about a 10-square-mile area out there, but it's going through changes in the federal government of who's going to regulate it. They're thinking of regulating it more like the Energy Department as opposed to a Natural Resources Department. But yes, we are doing a test of wave energy right now.
I'd like you to join me in thanking Ed Harrington, our speaker this evening. You've been listening to a program of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Kerry Curtis, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club, observing over a century of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.